Welcome, everyone. I'm your host, Emerson Green. I figured I'd join in on the responding to things Alex O'Connor said bandwagon. He recently uploaded a new video reiterating his no free will position. Although he clarifies that he's an agnostic about this along with most things, which is something I relate to quite a bit. The more you learn about these topics, the more it becomes clear just how many places there are for something to have gone wrong in your reasoning. It's not that you don't have an opinion or a lot to say about it. It's just that there are many things you've probably missed or haven't considered or didn't properly understand. As Alex said, it's very easy to be catastrophically wrong. So this wasn't a scripted video or anything, but I still wanted to respond to it because it was the main reason, I think, that convinced me of an incompatibilist free will skepticism way back when. And at least in this video, it's Alex's main argument against free will. Schopenhauer summed up the thought like this, and I'm paraphrasing. You can do what you will, but you can't will what you will. And if your willing is ultimately outside your control, then we don't have free will.
I don't believe in free will. Although, as I keep saying to people as of late, I am agnostic about most things. Not because I don't have a view. Like, I'm pretty convinced that free will doesn't make sense as a concept. But just because I think it's so easy to be catastrophically wrong in so many ways that I'm just constantly aware that, like, this I could have missed something crucial at the basis of this thought, right? Free will, at least the kind of free will that I'm talking about, is like agency of your actions, your ability to control what you do. If you rewound the clock, you could have done something else. You could have worn a different shirt today. You could have not come to this talk, something like that. I don't think that exists. That conversation is tied up intimately with the question of determinism. Is everything preordained? But that's not the same question, I think. Like, there could be a universe that is not predetermined, and yet you don't have control over your actions. You know, like a tree does not have control over the way in which it sways. But even in a non-deterministic universe, it wouldn't have control. The interesting question is, like, to what extent are we the authors of our own actions? And for me, there are lots of ways of looking at this, but a good philosophical entry point to this is to consider the behaviors that you do, any kind of action that you ever perform. You either do it because you want to or because you're forced to. Those are the only two options. Anytime you do anything at all, consciously at least. You do it because you want to or because you're forced to. Now, if you come to this talk, it's because you wanted to come to the talk or because you were forced to by some person or something. Now, you might say, okay, well, I didn't really want to come to this talk, but, you know, I thought that, like, it might be good for this reason or that reason, but I didn't really want to. You know, I went to the gym earlier, but I didn't really want to go to the gym. Okay, but we've got to be comprehensive in our analysis here. You didn't want to go to the gym, but you did want to be healthy. You wanted to stay at home and be lazy, but you also wanted to be healthy. Which of those things did you want more? Well, for a fact, we know that what you wanted more was to go to the gym, because that's what you ended up doing. And had the desires been stronger in the other direction, you would have done the other thing. So when you've got a choice in front of you and you're trying to figure out which one you want more, you don't so much decide which one you want more as you just find out. I mean, like, presumably most of you right now would prefer, if I gave you the option between having a strawberry milkshake and slapping your mother in the face, you would prefer to have a strawberry milkshake. And crudely speaking, I would ask you to try to want the other one. Try to make the other one more desirable. Not the same thing as choosing to do it. Choose to make it more desirable. You can't just do that. You can't control your desires in that way. It's like, okay, well, I could force myself to go and think about my mother in the worst possible terms and, like, try to compel myself to... And yeah, you could sort of control your wants that way. But you'd have to want to do that in order to do that. And you wouldn't be able to control how much you wanted to do that. In other words, you just push the problem back. So I think you only ever do anything because you want to or because you're forced to. There's a balance of essentially desires. Conscious action is it presupposes that there is a way you want the world to be that it is currently not. That's why we act. You know, I pick up a glass of water and drink it because I'm thirsty and I prefer not to be thirsty. Preference governs actions. But also I'm talking right now, so I don't want to pick up the water. Which of those desires is stronger, my desire to keep talking or the desire to drink the water? Well, you already know the answer to that question without having to scan my brain because it's my behaviors. I don't get to choose that. That's completely outside of my control. As Schopenhauer famously put it, as one of our speakers quoted in the debate last night, you can do whatever you will, but you can't will what you will. And that's the crucial thing. So, is the universe determined or not? I don't know. But that to me is completely irrelevant to the question of whether you have control over your actions. Of course, if the universe is not determined, a lot of people think that's because there's some kind of randomness in physics. Either everything is following a set path from the Big Bang, or maybe at the quantum level, there's some kind of randomness going on. I always like to remind people that randomness is by definition something that you are also not in control of. If something is determined, it means that you can't help but do it. If something is random, which is to say indeterminate, that's the definition of not being in control. So either way, you're not in control of your actions because you're not in control of your wants.
So I agree that we can't will what we will, or will what we will to will. I don't think it's metaphysically possible to have that kind of ultimate control. This is the kind of freedom Nietzsche dismissively called free will in the superlative metaphysical sense, which he also characterized as a rape of logic. We can't possibly have that kind of responsibility for our actions, which, as Galen Strawson pointed out, requires us to be fully responsible for the way that we are, since we do what we do because of the way that we are. But I still think we have free will. I don't want to be a total revisionist about our concept of freedom, but I really don't think that whether or not we have free will depends on whether we can impossibly self-create our genes, early environment, all our desires, and so on. It seems like the free will skeptics here, including my former self, are attacking a maximalist version of control that no one should defend, but then declaring victory without grappling with compatibilist views, and yes, libertarian views that similarly do not require one to self-cause their own nature or something. I think free will skeptics are more revisionary in their concept of free will than I am. In ordinary life, if I say I did something of my own free will, what do I mean? I just mean that it was up to me, that my actions were in accordance with my desires, that no one else made me do it, that I was doing what I wanted to do, what I intended to do, voluntarily. There were no special circumstances, no mitigating factors, no uncontrollable compulsions or anything that would diminish my responsibility for what I did. When we say that we signed a contract of our own free will, I sincerely doubt there is anyone who ever meant it in the superlative metaphysical sense. We can agree that we don't have that kind of freedom, but how does that mean we've ruled out free will, period? It doesn't. It would be like ruling out a Trinitarian model of God and then becoming an atheist. I think it's worthwhile what they and Galen Strawson have written on free will. We don't have that. That's the hard limit that no one can pass. There is not a single possible world where we have the kind of freedom that Strawson successfully argues against. And this can help everyone get clearer on what kind of freedom we could have by drawing a line in the sand that says, you can't have this. No one can have this. But here's what we can have. We can still have a distinction between voluntary and involuntary actions. It's not like if determinism is true, there's no longer any distinction between doing something voluntarily and doing something at gunpoint. There's still a distinction between intentionally doing something and unintentionally doing something. Obviously, determinism doesn't imply that there's no difference between accidentally knocking over a glass and intentionally smashing it on the floor. There's still such a thing as being out of control, still a difference between approval and disapproval of first-order desires, reason-responsiveness and non-reason-responsiveness. We also still have our dispositions to act in a certain way under different conditions. That's all still there, even granting determinism. Alex is right, of course, that determinism versus indeterminism isn't really the issue. Even if there's some irreducible randomness in our universe, that's not enough to make you free. If an action is random and there's no reason at all that you performed it, that doesn't mean it was freely chosen. But if your action was caused by your will to perform that action, that for some reason is not good enough for Alex and other free will skeptics because you didn't choose your will. And I want to grant that that's an ethically salient point in some respects, but I just don't see why it should be an earth-shattering revelation that would destroy free will entirely. I want to quote what Dan Dennett had to say about Sam Harris's book, Free Will. Quote, Harris does a particularly good job getting readers to introspect on their own decision-making and notice that it just does not conform to the fantasies of this all-too-traditional understanding of how we think and act. But some of us have long recognized these points and gone on to adopt more reasonable, more empirically sound, models of decision and thought. And we think we can articulate and defend a more sophisticated model of free will that is not only consistent with neuroscience and introspection, but also grounds a modified, toned-down, non-absolute variety of responsibility that justifies both praise and blame, reward and punishment. We don't think this variety of free will is an illusion at all, but rather a robust feature of our psychology and a reliable part of the foundations of morality, law, and society. Harris, we think, is throwing out the baby with the bathwater. And later on, quote, "If he can be the author of his book, then he can be the author of his thoughts. If he's not the author of free will, he should take his name off the cover, shouldn't he?" End quote. Sam Harris is the cause of his book, and if he didn't write it, it wouldn't have written itself. He protests, saying we can't choose our desires in the first place. What would we even use to do so? Other desires? Well, yeah, why not? Think of it this way. Do you think you can influence the desires of other people? Of course. You can do the same with yourself. Just like you can influence the desires of others, you can influence your own. You can set yourself on a course to be a better person or a worse person. That's self-authorship. Dennett, of course, doesn't mean that one can be the author of their thoughts or desires in the maximalist sense, but so what? Quote, "In the end, if we trace back far enough to our infancy or beyond, we arrive at conditions that we were just lucky, or unlucky, to be born with. This undeniable fact is not the disqualifier of responsibility that Harris and others assume. It disqualifies us for ultimate responsibility, which would require us to be the original cause of ourselves, as Galen Strawson has observed, but this is nonsense." End quote. When Harris says we do not know what we intend to do until the intention itself arises, Dennett retorts, "True, but so what?" Free will skeptics who use this introspection argument usually don't spell it out. They seem to think it's just obvious that this destroys free will, but I need to know why we're not free in any significant sense or responsible at all, simply because we don't have the kind of ultimate, absolute control that couldn't possibly exist. They may be right that the common sense view of free will is fraught with confusion, but so are many other psychological concepts. For that matter, many concepts in physics are horribly misunderstood among laypeople. That doesn't mean that physicists are engaging in changing the subject and revisionism, and it certainly doesn't mean that we should say X isn't real because the extremely confused folk version of X doesn't perfectly correspond with the most philosophically and scientifically defensible version of X. Ultimately, the "you can't will what you will" attack on sourcehood doesn't disprove free will. You can still be the source of your actions, responsible for them, and this argument doesn't succeed against that claim. And here's one rough analogy to explain how I'm thinking about sourcehood. What do you do if you want to water your plants? You go to a source of water, like a faucet or a hose. Would we accept it if someone claimed the hose is actually not a source of water? Not really, since it's not generating water ex nihilo or something. Who cares? It's still a source of the water. Well, you see, the spigot isn't the ultimate source of water. It's getting it from the pipes. But it gets even worse. The pipes get it from other pipes, which get it from the municipal water system. But that gets its water from the Sacramento River. So the river is the source, scientifically speaking. That is, if we're being honest about things. But not so fast. The river gets its water from the Klamath Mountains. Yeah, okay, that's all true. But how does that mean that the spigot is not a source of water? In the same way, you can be the source of your actions. It really is the case that you did what you did because it was your will to do it. No one made you do it. You were doing exactly what you wanted to do. Just because your will is a part of a larger chain of cause and effect doesn't mean it's somehow not the proximate cause of your actions. It is the correct explanation for why you did what you did. You deliberated and exercised your ability to do it. If I'm not the source of my actions because I didn't self-generate my own nature ex nihilo, then the hose isn't the source of water. By the way, why would you stop at the mountain? Why wouldn't we keep going, back to the formation of the earth itself? I think to say that it's false that the hose is a true source of water has some pretty absurd implications if you follow it through, because there's no reason to arbitrarily stop the chain of explanation at the mountain. That's not the true, real source any more than the river or the pipes. You could just keep going back. Where do you stop? And I guess what I'm trying to say is that this idea of sourcehood, my idea of sourcehood, is perfectly at home with our common sense views, with our application of similar concepts in other contexts, which I only bring up because compatibilists are often accused of straying too far from the ordinary notion of free will. Okay, you might be the source of your actions in some totally insignificant sense, but, you compatibilist fool, could you have done otherwise? That's the real question. Well, yes, I think I could have done otherwise, even if determinism is true. So I want to talk about my favorite form of compatibilism, dispositional compatibilism, forwarded by Kadri Vivalin. Quote, "Dispositional compatibilists claim that the most fundamental free will facts are facts about our causal powers, for instance, our power to decide on the basis of deliberation, and that our causal powers differ in complexity but not in kind from dispositions like fragility, elasticity, and flammability. We think that determinism is incompatible with free will because determinism seems to have the consequence that we have no power over anything, not even our own choices. But if our causal powers are dispositions, this isn't true. Dispositions are uncontroversially compatible with determinism, and dispositions are real properties of their bearers. They don't cease to exist simply because they're not being manifested. A rock doesn't lose its window-breaking power just because it isn't currently breaking windows. A person doesn't lose her decision-making power just because she isn't currently making a decision. Nor does she lose her power to decide to do one thing just because she makes another decision instead." End quote. If something is flammable, does it cease to be flammable just because it's not currently in flames? No. But what if determinism is true, and it just so happens that it will never go up in flames? Does that mean it no longer counts as flammable? No, it's still flammable. It could have gone up in flames. If free will is a matter of our dispositions, then determinism is no threat at all. As Vivalin says, dispositions, like flammability, don't cease to exist just because they're not currently being manifested. I still have the ability to talk about something else, even if I continue talking about free will. If I say something is fragile, or elastic, or flammable, it remains so even if those dispositions are never manifested. But if you ran the tape back and played it again, this flammable object wouldn't be on fire. It couldn't have done otherwise, even if you played the tape back infinity times. Yeah, so what? Does that mean it no longer has that disposition? In some sense, yes, it couldn't have been otherwise. But in a dispositional sense, it clearly could have. So on the dispositional account of free will, you could have done otherwise. It doesn't matter that if you played the tape back, it would just go the same way every time. You don't lose your dispositional powers just because they didn't manifest under such and such conditions. Quote, "The key claim of dispositional compatibilism is that our abilities, including the abilities in virtue of which we have free will, are dispositions with the same kind of causal structure. We've got the free will we think we have, including real choices and genuine alternatives, by having a certain bundle of abilities, dispositions, while being reasonably fortunate with respect to our surroundings. But determinism robs us neither of free will nor freedom of action." End quote. So I'll link an article and a podcast episode about dispositional compatibilism if you want to hear it fleshed out a bit more. So I agree with Alex and Schopenhauer and Sam Harris and Dennett that we can do as we will, but we can't will what we will. We can't get underneath our own natures. In fact, I think what they're describing is not even metaphysically possible. But just because we don't have that kind of superlative freedom doesn't mean we're not free. Freedom comes in degrees, and it remains up to me to either end things here or keep going. I'm choosing to end it here. So do check out my free will playlist on YouTube. Thank you for listening. I've been Emerson Green, and I'll see you next time.